We're live here at blogtalkradio.com/election channel. My name's Thomas Keegan, the host here. You can also see all our interviews at libertarianprogressive.com. After tonight, we'll have 37 interviews, and by the end of the week, we're going to get near 50. And tonight, we're interviewing Nabu Ezi, Green Party candidate for the U.S. House of Representatives, District Number 3 in Maryland. And he's going to be on the ballot this November 8th, 2016. And he's the only third-party candidate on the ballot in his district. So that's who we're interviewing. Independent third-party candidates who are on the ballot and the only third-party candidates in their district. So we're delighted to be interviewing Nabu today. And you can find out more information. He has a Facebook page, facebook.com/Nabu, N-N-A-B-U. Easy, easy, E for Congress, Maryland, 3rd District, or you could just Google Nabu Easy Green Party, and it'll come right up. So, Nabu, good to talk with you today. How is your campaign going, and is this your first time running for office, sir?
Yes, it is my first time running, and thank you for having me, Tom. This is my first time running, but I've been involved with the Democratic and the Republican Party in the past, and decided to run with the Green over a year ago. I joined the Green Party over a year ago.
Okay, that sounds excellent. And have you been in any debates so far? Are there any debates coming up for your congressional district, sir?
Yes, there is one coming up. The Anne Arundel County Women's League is having a debate on 26th of this month. Mr. Plaster will be on there, and so will John Sorbain.
Thank you. All right, sounds good. And now, how come you decided to run as a Green Party candidate this year instead of the status quo, I guess I could say, Republican or Democrat? And so, how come you're running as a Green Party candidate this year, and why are you the best option for your district, sir?
Well, the Greens have there's two things in their platform that I have a passion for, and that's social justice and income equality. And I believe I'm the best candidate to represent this because I'm introducing the basic income guarantee. In Baltimore City alone, one quarter of the residents live in poverty, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. And welfare is not going to bring you out of poverty. Welfare will actually keep you in poverty. That's why I'm introducing a basic income guarantee to not only lift Americans out of poverty, but to remove that stress of the thought of you losing your job or the stress of maybe you can't go get a checkup because you're afraid of losing your job. To help you pay for your the basics, to help you pay for housing, utilities, and food. I'm not going to be kicking around like Mr. Sorbain does. He's introduced the Government for the People Act, but that's I'll wait for you to get to that topic. But that's
absolutely
why I run.
And we can't wait to get to that topic. I've actually myself has, and there's been lots of people who have introduced similar ideas. I mean, I wrote an article. I'll have a link to it, but people can just Google guaranteed annual income, an idea whose time has come. It's in a Tom Hartman forum, and you'll see it there. I think it's something that can build consensus. I remember talking to you on the phone before this interview that, you said Milton Friedman, who is no liberal, he's very libertarian, very capitalist. He was introducing an idea like this. President Nixon was considering it. And so it's instead of, kind of tinkering with the edges and just having this vicious circle, this is something that is thinking out of the box. It's very simple and no more vicious circle. I mean, I can also say it's been tried in some cities in Canada with some good success
exactly.
For a couple of years.
Even even here in the United States, the Y Combinator, a Silicon Valley incubator firm, is sponsoring a basic income guarantee test in Oakland.
Awesome.
So here also, it's being tested. Even in Alaska, they share their, they pay their residents on oil revenues and dividends.
That's true. Yeah, let's go over what it isn't and what it is. You know, the guaranteed basic income that you're the only person in any party in the entire United States who would be introducing this legislation, I mean, that I've talked to at least, and I can't really imagine any Republican or Democrat doing it. So, I mean, that's one benefit of having someone who's an independent or a Green Party candidate or a third party candidate, is you're going to have different ideas debated and discussed where they're not even thought about now. But like you said, it will, what it won't do is it won't necessarily guarantee results. I mean, you could still become like a Bill Gates or a millionaire if you wanted to. This isn't preventing anyone from going beyond the basic income, is it?
No, it's not. What it is just like when I was about to graduate from college, I had a lot of ideas that I wanted to, you know, start business, because I didn't know what I was going to do when I graduated from college. So I had some business ideas, but with those business ideas, I realized that I had to go out and market it. I had to knock on businesses. I had to go talk to people that was going to invest in it. But these things take time and money. So if I had, I knew I had to, my bills are still going to be coming in. But if I had a basic income, I could now go out and start my business. This is one of the benefits of having basic income. I could have started my business and still have income coming in without being afraid of risking my whole savings and losing my apartment at the time. And having a time to do it. This is one of the things. We want to encourage people to become entrepreneurs. We want mothers to go back to school without being afraid of, you know, how are they going to pay their bills. We want people to be able to afford food and utilities. So there's a lot of benefits to guarantee, basic income guarantee, which the current system, which has a combination of a dozen programs. Basic income guarantee puts all those checks, like the TANF, the SSI for disabled. We have unemployment insurance. Basic income guarantee consolidates all those checks into one, and the administrative costs would be reduced tremendously.
Yeah, so you could actually cut out a lot of red tape. You could actually get rid of a lot of welfare programs and just have one welfare program. In some ways, it's actually more capitalist or more free market, because you're going to give the money to the people and they're going to vote with their dollars which products in the marketplace they want to succeed or fail. So instead of saying, here's some money, but you have to spend it on this, instead, here's some money. It's enough that you can, you know, survive, not have the stress of, you know, the market going up and down, crashes and things like that. You know, you can live a life worth living, but to pursue different things that you really can decide to vote on. And it's going to be good for the people selling food as well, because they're going to have more customers, I guess, possibly, too.
Not only that, also, you can decide what job you want to work. You might be at a job that is polluting the environment. You don't really want to work there, but because you need to pay your bills, you have to work there. Now, if you have a basic income, you can now choose where you want to work. I mean, if there's an environmentally friendly factory that you want to work at, you go there and work. And also, it also helps supplement the income for, you know, we need people to cut our grass. We need people to shampoo our rugs, because we're working so much, we don't have time for those things. And we have to also encourage, you know, we have to compensate mothers who are, who take care of the home, and fathers who take care of the home. All these, and my initial target now is for people 18 years and over to receive this income. That's about 242 million Americans. But gradually, we want to include children also. Once there's a broad, I'm sure everybody would be receptive of this idea because both parties, conservatives and liberals, love this idea. Like I said earlier, Nixon loved this idea. So did the right-wing economist, Milton Friedman. So it's Martin Luther King embraced it. So this is an idea that's, now's the time. Like I said, 2 weeks ago, I went to a gas station, and I could pay gas at the pump with cash. I went inside a gas station, convenience store, and discovered that three cashiers, the three cashier shift I used to see there is now reduced to one. If manufacturing is gradually becoming automated. In 5 to 10 years, we'll be producing more goods than we have people that can afford them because we've got machines producing items now. Google and Uber are not testing driverless cars.
Mm-hmm.
So in 5 to 10 years or 30 years, we're going to have cars that are driverless. What are we going to do to – what's going to happen to the taxi drivers? What's going to happen to the truck drivers, the ambulance drivers? There's about 3.5 million Americans.
Now, you're absolutely right. I mean, we're going in the automation society and, you know, raising the minimum wage, although might seem like a good idea right now, I mean, when you're talking about 20, 50 years from now, that's not going to help, you know, bring back more jobs. Some of these trade deals also are not going to bring back a lot of these manufacturing jobs. So, you know, having things be automated at, you know, such a fast pace exponentially is not going to bring back jobs. It might create some other jobs here and there, but really the guaranteed annual income is something that's and might create more jobs because it might put more money in people's pockets. And then if you have a consumer base out there, you know, people are going to get rich based on who people decide, what people decide to vote on in the marketplace. I mean, if I was an inventor and I created something, I could still get rich because everyone now has this base of income. And if they decide to vote with their dollars on my product, I would still get rich. In fact, it gives people an equal vote, not an equal result, but they can start from the same starting line, per se.
That is true. That is exactly what basic income does, not just in terms of industrial or manufacturing or entrepreneurship, but also when you go to politically, people are voting now blindly because, let's say the Democrats are telling them, look, if you don't vote for us, you're going to lose your welfare. So people are not thinking outside the box. They just vote blindly for something that's going to keep them in poverty for the rest of their lives because welfare, as we know, has not worked. It has kept people in poverty. But basic income lifts them a little bit out of it. It doesn't make them comfortable, but it lifts you out of poverty.
Right.
And the time for this is now. Because we're running out of time with technology advancing every day. We are running out of time.
Yeah, I mean, we spent trillions of dollars on the war against poverty, and the poverty percentage has remained exactly the same. And, you know, people just get stuck in a vicious circle. I mean, they get, you know, their car breaks down, so any money that they saved up now has to go to that car breaking down, or they have a medical emergency, or just whatever it is. They're just caught in this vicious cycle, and, you know, it's just really hard to get out of. But this would help people get out of it completely and, you know, and realize there's more to life than just, you know, being, you know, a rat in a cage, you know, running on that treadmill. And we'll touch on some of the other issues as well, but I mean, I'm sure this would, so it's kind of more like trickle up instead of trickle down, because now every single dollar that's distributed in the U.S. comes from, you know, the banks, from loans and things like that. With the guaranteed annual income, you know, you could still have banks. I mean, people might want to keep their money in a bank, so the banks would have to compete for people's services. I mean, you know, and so if you, and then they could use that money to invest or to collect interest or stuff like that. Now it's just the opposite. It's trickle down. That's what we're in now, but the guaranteed annual income is just the opposite. It's trickle up.
Exactly. And what's you have banks like that are too big to fail now, but if you have basic income, they'll be competing, and you would avoid what Wells Fargo did to its customers a couple of weeks ago. Well, that was discovered a couple of weeks ago. So now we wouldn't have to deal with these something that's too big to fail because they'll be competing. It'd be the collaborative.
The funny thing is we already have a guaranteed annual income. It's just that right now it's going to some select groups, and it's not even fair. It's like in the billions of dollars to too big to fail banks. They have a guaranteed annual income. I mean, if they ever mess up, we bail them out. I mean, they have better than a guaranteed annual income. We're just talking about changing it. The priorities of who actually gets it. So make no mistake, there is already a guaranteed annual income out there. It's just who is getting it.
Yeah. That's true, and it's termed differently. It's not called welfare when the big banks or corporation you receive it. It's not called welfare. it's given a better term. So when you want people to have a dislike for something, because when the masses who aren't even getting what the corporations are getting. Like the oil companies, when they get it, it's something bad or evil. But something that may seem impossible in the United States, right now it seems impossible because people call a social welfare program. But health care for seniors seemed unrealistic and expensive. So did Obamacare. But when people start seeing a basic income guarantee as an insurance against a changing job market rather than simply as a handout, I believe that the politics around it will change.
Yeah, and here's some math. I've done some math on it. If you did everyone over 18, and there's 234,564,000, about 235 million people, let's say, that are over 18 in the U.S., if they had, for an example, a guaranteed annual income of $15,000 each, that would cost the U.S. $3.5 trillion to give $15,000 to 235 million people, and that's how many millions of people there are over 18 in the U.S. right now. Most recent budget was $3.8 trillion. So, it's definitely doable, and it's going to change a whole paradigm. You could do other things. I mean, you could maybe supplement it with like a import tax, maybe a sales tax, maybe an inheritance tax or something like that. But it's definitely doable. Yeah.
It is. You could also, we always get that question, where are we going to get the money from? You can also tax the natural resources. I mean, it'll be a government program, so it should be funded out of a common pool of revenues from a variety of sources. I mean, there's a lot of ways we can... I mean, when we go to war, that's one of the speeches I gave some weeks ago. When we declare war, that money comes out of somewhere. We print it. And until we declare war on poverty, that's another war. When I get to D.C., I'm going to declare war on poverty so we can find this money somewhere. Because when we declare war on Afghanistan, we spent $840 billion so far and counting. Afghanistan is $740 billion counting. Iraq is $820 billion and counting.
Right.
The Pentagon alone has $129 million slush fund. So once we declare war, we seem to find money somewhere. They drop a type of bomb that costs like $500,000 each time they drop a bomb in Syria. So somehow we're getting this money. So big is funding it is not going to be an issue. We have 126 different welfare programs the United States government runs. And you can't tell me, combined with the administrative cost of running those programs, it's going to be greater than $3.8 trillion.
Yeah, let's just get rid of all those welfare programs and just have the guaranteed annual income instead, maybe, you know? I mean, there could be some special situations, but, yeah.
That is the whole idea. That's a concept, to get rid of all those welfare programs and just issue one check. You get rid of all the bottlenecks and administration of it. I mean, you have to hire employees, lots of paperwork. I mean, you just get rid of the red tape.
And then if you make the argument that a lot of those people will be out of jobs, well, guess what? They'll also get the guaranteed annual income.
Exactly. There you go. There's an organization called Give Directly, and they've been a huge success in Uganda and Kenya. They started by giving recipients $1,000 cash over the course of a year. And the World Bank praised Give Directly as the most effective social program in recent times because they said if they give cash to people instead of, you know, goods or other things, they make more use of it. And they said 99% of the people that have received this cash donation have either improved their lives, they've increased their business, or started a business. So giving people cash instead of goods or other services is one of the most effective programs because people are going to come back and say, hey, they're going to use it on drugs, alcohol, but this is a case in point.
Yeah, and actually people might think people are going to do that, but when it's actually put to the test, that's usually not what happens. Most people are taking drugs and alcohol because they feel stressed and impoverished, but when they feel like they have hope and something to live for, they tend to spend the money on investing in their kids or starting a new business or, you know, cleaning up their environments, and so they, you know, have a whole different outlook. I mean, it has been tested in a city in Canada for 2 years. They were concerned that how it would work, but most people actually used it to save money, send their kids to school, and do constructive things with it. So that's actually not, it didn't really have negative consequences. It ran real good, but it got voted out after conservative legislators, took back control of their legislature. But it has been voted on in Sweden recently, or Switzerland, one of the two, and they didn't approve it because it didn't pay enough. So maybe in their next run at it, they might be one of the first countries to do it. Hopefully we are. I mean, it's ahead of the curve. It doesn't get rid of capitalism, like you said, at all. I think that's, you can totally get rid of that argument. It addresses the heartfelt issues of making sure there's a social safety net, but it does it in a more free market way where people get to choose what they use it on. So it's a lot more free market in that aspect and gets rid of a lot of red tape. Well, let's ask you on a couple of other issues. I mean, this is a big issue and it goes into lots of many things. I mean, this is a financial issue. It's a poverty issue. It's a small and mid-sized business issue. It's not just one issue when you mention this, but what about the criminal justice system? Does that need to be reformed? Even with this guaranteed annual income, I can see crime reducing drastically, and I'm sure that will help. But does there need to be more accountability, body cameras, independent internal affairs for police, different incentives instead of quotas? What do you think about that issue?
I think that it definitely does need to be reformed. Here we are 25 years after Rodney King, and we're still talking about police reform. What I said on the Tom Hall show is that what the politicians do is they kick issues. They keep kicking it further up until we don't talk about it anymore. There's no resolution until something else supersedes it. Now, they say that this is one term that I don't like, taxpayer money. It's not my money unless I can control what you do with it. But let's say this is taxpayer money. We as taxpayers, last I checked, when I went to police. We're responsible for their paychecks. And the last few jobs I worked at, the person that paid my paychecks, they had a right to hire me, they had a right to fire me, and they had a right to discipline me. So I think a civilian review board should be established, oversight board over the police. There should be a civilian oversight board over the police.
And yeah, just like there should for Congress. Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly.
Do we serve them or do they serve us?
Exactly. Everything's turned backwards. So, yeah. The time is, you're going to keep having these issues, especially like the Democrats. Whenever they've been running cities, it's like over 20 cities they've run. And when they come in, the school goes down. After that, crime rises. And then you have these tensions with police because Democrats are basically, they prioritize the vendors, the school vendors, the banks in the cities. Look at Detroit. Look at Baltimore. Look at Chicago. Look at Newark. Look at Camden. All these are Democratic-run cities. If it was one or two cities, you say, okay, this might be a fluke. But this is over 20 cities that the Democrats have run to the ground. And it's a blueprint that's flawed. They're found a blueprint that's flawed. I don't know if it's flawed or on purpose, really.
Yeah, that's the kind of questions that you come up with when you see those kind of statistics. I mean, you just have to ask, and hopefully if, you know, we send people to Congress like you, you will be able to ask them directly under them taking the oath to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And so hopefully you would do that. And what about, the wars overseas, military spending, our whole foreign policy? I mean, how would you address how we get along with other countries and things like that?
We have 800 bases overseas costing us $200 billion a year. About 70 years after World War II, we don't need that many bases. We need to close. I would close all of them to actually help fund basic income guarantee. We're fighting wars, unnecessary wars that are costing us billions of dollars. We haven't fixed ourselves yet. We have people that are suffering, are living in poverty in this nation. But yet we go to fight wars overseas. I think we should have our foreign policy should be based on diplomacy. We only go to war unless it's absolutely necessary. I don't see any when it's absolutely necessary to go to war. But the wars we're fighting in overseas, Iraq, Afghanistan, and possibly Syria. Let the Russians deal with the Syrian issue.
You still want us to have the strongest military, but not something maybe that's 10 times bigger than the rest of the world.
Even if we cut our $700 billion a year, we spend every year in half, we'll still be the highest spending military in the world.
Yeah.
Now, we're defending Europe. Europe has one of the best. They don't even, because we defend them, they spend their money they save from us defending them on social programs. You can go to European Union, go to college for free.
Right.
My sister-in-law lives in London. She says once you turn 18, you can have free housing. If you lose your house, you automatically qualify to get a house. Let's say you lose your job, you can apply to get a free housing, so that stress is alleviated from you. Because Europe is not spending money on defense, because we're defending them. Part of $700 billion we're spending is to shield Europe.
Yeah, Europe and parts of Asia as well. You know, we're
exactly.
And Saudi Arabia, and that's very
Saudi
true.
Saudi Arabia, we're pained by exactly.
What about, I think you could call this an energy issue or a national defense issue, but what about renewable energies? Because I think you could also call it a national defense issue, because if we're independent instead of being addicted, you know, that kind of serves our national defense. What do you think? Do you have any positions on how we should go forward regarding energy? Because it's so important.
Yes. we should be. I don't know if maybe the lobbyists, but we're in a position to use renewable energy. We need to be starting looking for other sources of energy other than oil. Now, I know that possibly Saudi Arabia and all these other countries are lobbying to continue to have oil as the main source of energy. But we're destroying the planet. We're also fracking, which is destroying our environment. And we know this is happening, but the lobbyists are covering it up. Because they funded politicians, the politicians will cover them up. Like I was saying 2 weeks ago, John Sirbain has a Government by the People Act. He wants to establish, he wants citizen donors to fund the campaign. But yet this year, he's gotten 44 donations. He's gotten donations from 44 different organizations. So if he was very serious about Government by the People Act, he would only accept donations from citizen donors. But he's accepted so far 44 different organizations. And who do you think when he gets to Washington he's going to represent? He's going to represent those organizations.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's more likely.
A lot of policies are influenced by outside actors because they're funding these politicians. And in return, these politicians have to represent them. That's why all the social issues we're having continues to repeat itself every year. And then when riots come up, the Democrats or politicians, they give the same three words. The need for social justice, the need for investment, the need for empowerment. Those are three key words they always say in their speeches. Every year.
Like a broken record, yes.
Exactly.
Sure.
Exactly.
Well, is it safe to assume you would also want to, overhaul the war on drugs and view that completely differently as well?
Yes, I think we need to send people to rehabilitation centers, not jail.
It'd be a lot less expensive, a lot less families impacted, et cetera.
But one thing President Obama did was he took the federal jails from being privatized because it became a business. Now I hope our state governments follow suit and stop privatizing prisons because it becomes a for-profit. When it's for-profit, corruption can seep in if it's not there already.
Yeah, they have an incentive. I mean, let's talk about the lobbyists again. There's lobbyists that lobby Congress to create more contracts for the federal, prisons. I mean, I think that's another issue gaining more consensus. So let me ask you this. In regards to building consensus, giving the best chance that you can to get elected, you have another debate coming up. Let's envision NABU being elected to Congress. And again, anyone just tuning in, we're talking with NABU as the Green Party candidate for the U.S. House of Representatives District 3 for Maryland. He's going to be on the ballot November 8th, 2016. He's the only third party candidate option this year in his district. And so what would 2 years, because, the thing about Congress is you're elected for 2 years, so you have 2 years. What would a two-year term with you, what will people be saying 2 years from now that you did and that you tried to do to change the discussion in Congress in the United States?
Well, I'm going to be that I represented the people when I got there. I'm going to have the because a leader a good reflection of our leaders, the team he has around him. I'm going to have a lot of Greens around me, Green Party people, to help me pass basic income guarantee. within, that's the first thing I'm going to start working on. The second thing is the social justice. We need a social justice reform. We need added interaction, some kind of like the body cameras you suggested. We need police in the community being more engaged. And we also need a civilian oversight board overseeing the police department. So these are the two major things I'm going to work on when I get to Congress. And I'm hoping to surround myself with qualified, good people to help me achieve it.
That's important. It's a lot of one argument people say is like, once you get in there, you know, what are you going to do to keep yourself not in the bubble so that you're, you know, still in relation to regular people? Are you going to meet with them a lot, or how are you going to stay, you know, out of the Washington bubble and still, you know, be in contact with regular people?
That's funny you said that, because there's one guy that called me. He was a Democrat. He said he wants to get to me before I get to Washington, because if I get to Washington, I'm going to be corrupted. So he wants to give me a platform idea that he wants me to use, because he said if I get there, I may become corrupted. So I was like, no, because I'm not a Democrat. I'm a third party candidate. I haven't become a politician yet. I'm still a social activist. So, but I'm going to be going to still meeting people in grocery stores, still going around the 3rd District, asking people, what can we do in Washington to make your lives better? That's a lot of things. I want to have face-to-face time with people, because that's who I'm representing. I'm not going there because I have not taken any money from corporate donors. So I'm going to represent ordinary day-to-day people. I'm not going to be stuck in D.C.
And it's kind of like, you know, if people have that attitude of, like, whoever we send there is going to be corrupt, then we're never going to resolve anything. We have to, you know, take some risk and, you know, send some people who we think are going to do the best job. Otherwise, nothing's going to change, you know. So,
exactly, because you have a gridlock in D.C. You have the Democrats and Republicans. That two-party system is destroying this country. You have two parties that don't get along. They can't do anything. If one has a great idea, the other one would knock it down. So you have this gridlock, so we need this third party. They say, no, if you vote for a third party, you're voting for the other candidate. But they forget that the Republican Party, both parties were once a third party.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, the Republicans were a third party. And it's not as risky when you're talking about Congress. I mean, as far as a presidency, that's kind of a big issue. But as far as Congress goes, there's 435 members in the House, 100 members in the Senate. So if we want to really make that impact, I think, you know, the House of Representatives is a place to really vote your hearts and your mind.
That is true. Well, we got to start firing these guys one at a time. I mean, they won't get the message. Unless we start sending them home.
Yeah, that's another thing. If just by electing you is going to send a message in itself, you know, and bring in more competition. And so maybe
exactly.
We need some more competition. You're talking about England and Europe having these policies. Almost every single country in Europe has at least 4 major political parties.
Exactly.
So maybe that's
exactly
why they have some of these other reforms.
Exactly. Well, that's a good point. That is a good point. We're one of the few countries with a two-party system. And a lot of our candidates are not even being invited for forums because the system is so rigged. They just want to feature the Democratic or the Republican Party. A lot of our, even when one of our candidates, Margaret Flowers, she met all the requirements to be in a forum, a debate. But they still blocked her from coming.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say they blocked her. They blocked the American people from coming, because it's the American people who got her on the ballot, and it's our tax dollars, like you said. If we had any control, you know, tax dollars really should be the people who have control over it. But you know, we're paying to have your name on the ballot, having her name on the ballot. So she's just as on the ballot as anyone else. But you are going to be in a debate coming up soon. And when is that debate again, Nabu?
It's October 26th.
All right.
And Anne Arundel County Women's League.
Excellent. And now let me ask you in closing here, and who are some of your favorite people, past or present?
John F. Kennedy, Martin Luther King. I think those two are my biggest favorite. One of the reasons I love Kennedy is because he moved the Federal Reserve. He privatized, he removed the United States from borrowed money, a sovereign nation from borrowed money from a supposed bank. There's nothing federal about the Federal Reserve, and they have no reserves. So why are we borrowing money from a supposed bank? We're a sovereign nation.
I think that's right. You know what? That did take a lot of guts. I'm sorry to interrupt. There's a couple states. I think South Dakota is one of the states that has their own public bank. So I was just going to ask you, do you think we should audit the Federal Reserve and maybe think about having a public banking system? Or
we should even, the Green Party is trying to get a public bank system in Maryland. We should audit the Federal Reserve. I think it's the biggest scam this country has ever gotten involved with. It's like,
yeah, that would be another way to afford the guaranteed annual income, is having a public bank.
Exactly. Exactly. And we're exploring that now in Maryland, what the Green Party is. And our mayor candidate is actually at the forefront of it.
So honestly, you could pretty much, I mean, get rid of the minimum wage. You could get rid of a lot of these welfare programs. You could probably get rid of the income tax by having a guaranteed annual income.
Yeah, that is the goal.
Yeah.
That is the goal, because that's why I'm not promoting the minimum wage, because it conflicts with the basic income.
Yeah, and if you want to work part-time somewhere else, you know, or full-time somewhere else, you're not prevented from doing that with the guaranteed annual income.
Exactly.
So it's like it takes the best things from the conservatism, and it takes the best things from liberalism, and instead of the worst things from both, and combines it all into one.
Exactly. Because conservatives love it because it gets rid of all those programs.
Yeah.
And it's cheap. I mean, it won't be as expensive as the system we have currently. And
that
is, takes you out of poverty.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like you would imagine a society 100 years from now, like if people solved all their issues and, you know, there was not as much strife or war, and they had to think of a system that's sustainable,
yeah,
they would probably have something like this. And now
exactly.
You're telling us why, like John F. Kennedy, I mean, yeah, he did start to issue out coins from the Treasury Department instead of just the Federal Reserve. So, I mean, that's a big thing. And you said Martin Luther King Jr. as well. So, yeah, two big iconic figures in American history for sure.
That's true. That is true. I admire their guts. They were strong leaders. Which is what
that's what we need more of nowadays. Yeah. Yes. Well, Nabu, it's been a pleasure. Any final words of wisdom in the last moments here?
Well, I would love for people to look at me, go to my Facebook page and find out more about this basic income guarantee. And on November 8th, I want you to put Nabu on your to-do.
That sounds great. And we're going to have links to your Facebook page. This interview, if anyone's coming in partway through, it's going to be rebroadcast at libertarianprogressive.com. It'll also be on our YouTube page at blogtalkradio.com/election channel. On all of those, we'll have links to his Facebook page so you can learn more about the details and things like that about the guaranteed annual income and other issues on his platform. And so, and again, you can just Google Nabu Easy, N-N-A-B-U, E-Z-E, Green Party, and his Facebook page will come right up. Well, it's been a pleasure. We do thank you for taking the time with this interview. I think it's been very enlightening. You're offering something that I have not heard anyone offer, and something that is consensus building across the political spectrum. We appreciate you being on the ballot, so we had the opportunity to interview you. I wish you good luck in your campaign. And thank you for taking the time, sir. We appreciate it very, very much.
Thank you for having me, Thomas.